I'm going to do is start the new topic, which I picked. But there were two or three requests that fit this topic, some almost directly. And one of the requests was to discuss why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't save us or didn't intervene by the Holocaust as he did by Purim. Another one was why Taka bad things happen to good people and why do we daven that bad things should go away if we believe that everything's for the good. And a third one was how do we answer people who are not from and questions that they ask, and one of the major questions they ask is where was God in the Holocaust or whatever. So putting all those three things together, I give gave a course in Michlala for many years on the Holocaust. And one second I will give you the table of contents of that course, and I realize that we really never discussed it in great detail here. Parts of it we've mentioned it time to time, but the whole Inyan we never really went through. And I'll give you the table of contents so you'll see what the Inyan includes. It obviously will be a topic that will take us a long time, but I think that it's kedai just for our own sake. Not just damashatoshi, you should know what there's many things here that are crucial questions that people ask that are kedai to know what to answer. So that's the topic that I decided to pick. I will give that Inyan here, which I never did, and given it in many different places, mostly in Hebrew, very rarely in English. And I think that that's kedai. Let me just tell you what will be covered, and then you can decide if you want to or not. First, we will give a very long, detailed hakadama, which will be how to view historical things from a Torah perspective, and why they have to be viewed from a Torah perspective. What is a Torah perspective? That won't be so long. That'll be maybe one or two shiurim. And then the lengthy hakadama of the Inyan of Tzadik Baralo, why do bad things happen to good people? And if we believe that they're really good, then why do we daven they should change? Why do we mourn for things that are bad? All of that is a hakdama. And then the purpose of tzaras. That's part of that thing. Then we'll speak about reasons that were given why the Holocaust happened. And part of that will be, can you give reasons? Is that a proper thing to give reasons for how? Who are we to know what the reasons for anything is, right? Without Nevi'im, and is it proper to give reasons? Are there reasons? Is it just Hester Ponim? Things happen because we're in Golus, and that's the way it is. And there's no way of knowing reasons. There aren't any reasons. Even if there are reasons, we couldn't possibly know them. And is it not a bizarre to the memory of these people to blame them and give reasons why they deserve what happened or whatever. And if in the end will come out that you can find reasons and under what circumstances, then what are the reasons that are given? To speak about the connection between Germany and Amalek, we may not do this all in order, we may do it where it's relevant, instead of waiting until next year Purim to speak about Germany and Amalek, may do it closer to Purim, even though it's not in the order. What were the historical development of the Holocaust and the halachic and hashkafa questions that arose because of the initial, they wanted to make a boycott of Germany before World War II because of what they were doing to the Jews. There was a difference of opinion amongst Gedolei Israel, whether that boycott was proper, wasn't proper, whatever, the reasons and other things like that. How to properly remember the Holocaust and why we don't necessarily celebrate Yom HaShoah, what the problem of it is. The taina that non-frum Jews have, that the Jews went like slaughter, sheep to the slaughter. Is that true? It's not true. How do we look at that? And then to finish off with about 20 to 25 she'elos that were asked, halacha she'elos, in the Shoah, and to go through them and what the halachic implications were of many things. Are you allowed to risk your life for other people? Are you allowed to save your life at the expense of other people's lives? And shilas like that, how much you have to be moshe nefesh for Torah, tefillah, mitzvahs, or whatever in such situations. And various halachic things that the main things won't be the answers, but the questions that were asked are very interesting from a historical standpoint and from a Musar standpoint of the kind of questions that people asked during the Holocaust. And then a sampling of some of the kinos that were made up after the Holocaust, and we'll also discuss as part of how to remember the Holocaust, if that's a proper thing or whatever, and that's pretty much the topics that we'll discuss. Okay, how many of you would like to spend? It's going to be probably a year topic. That's probably how long it's going to take to go through all of this. If not, then I'm willing to pick another topic. But if yes, then I think this is a topic that, first of all, I'm prepared to speak about, and second of all, I think it's good to hear. So, without trying to convince you, you have the choice. If anybody would like to say that they would rather not have this topic for some reason, I'd like to hear why. Okay, how many would like to start this topic? How many would not like to start this topic?
Something between.
Something between? Well, between the Holocaust and now? Yeah, there was Korean War, there was...
A lot of the Hashkafa aspects of it are applicable even without in the context of the Holocaust.
Right.
Personally, I have a distaste going over the Holocaust because it's been so beaten and repeated in recent times, more than any other section of history.
Okay, so maybe that's part of what we'll discuss. Is it really like that? And if so, how should one? Is there a chiyuv to remember it? And should it be, singled out? And if so, how? Why? I think that's part of it. That's important too to understand. So, and if it's to deal with the hashkafa things around it, but not necessarily the specific thing. Yeah, okay. Does anybody else feel like that? It's you're one of the reasons why I picked this topic. True.
I would say from a little bit different. I would say that you take the topic, but also make it germane also to what's going on nowadays. To help us deal with things that we have to deal with nowadays also. What benefit we can get from it, not just to deal with the Holocaust itself, but also the things of the Emunah that we can use to help us give us strength.
Okay, definitely.
Terrorist attacks, okay. And intifadas, and that type of thing.
Right, okay, definitely a lot of the things that I mentioned will be to take the lessons from them and apply them to other kinds, which obviously applies to a lot of things today. Okay, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that. It was included anyway. Okay. So tonight we will get started in a very short way. And Mirtz Hashem, in the coming weeks, we will... develop this little by little. Okay. First of all, there is no topic. Okay, again, this is the more general hakdama to this and to all historical things, how to view them properly. There's no topic, and I think that... those who've come to the shiur here for years, and we've covered many, many topics. There's no topic that is one-sided, black and white, right? It's all good, all bad, all positive, all negative. Everything in this world is complicated. There's nothing that is that's black and white. Since the chait of Adam HaRishon, the Sfarim say that the world has become a mixture of good and bad. And there's nothing that doesn't have some good in it, and nothing doesn't have some bad in it. And the obligation of a person is to recognize the good, recognize the bad, and then to decide whether the thing is in general good or in general bad, but not to miss the forest because of the trees, and not to meet the trees because of the forest. To see the details and know how to deal with the minority and the majority of the Indian, and to see the general, and to be able to see what, you know, what the general look at it is, despite the fact that there's always good and bad in everything. This I heard from Dr. Lukens, quoting Henry Kissinger, who I usually don't like to quote, but he said something that that was true, so we'll quote it in his name. He said that there usually are simple solutions to very complex problems, and they're usually wrong. Right? Looking at things in simplistic ways are usually not proper. And it's a very easy way out, and unfortunately we live amongst people who love to do that and give very simplistic answers to very complex things and take it like this is the way it is and that's it and there's no other way of looking at it, and any other way is either apikursis or who knows what. And that's not the case. It's not the way things are. And another thing that Rabbi Saul Salanter said, there are no klalim in Torah. There's no general rules. And even that's not a rule, he said. There's only details. And therefore, if you discuss a topic, a historical occurrence, you have to see it from all angles. You have to see the good, the bad, the implications that are positive, the ones that are negative, right? And not make generalizations, because there are no generalizations in Torah. I'll give you an example. Even a very simple question. Is it right to fast on Yom Kippur? Doesn't have a general simple answer. The answer is it depends. If you're healthy, it's right to fast on Yom Kippur. If you're not healthy, it's wrong to fast on Yom Kippur. And then there's even further detail, how unhealthy you are, whether it's right to fast all the way or part of the way or none of the way or whatever. So no, even a simple question like that doesn't have a simple answer. So every single topic that you can think of, right, is complex. There's pro, there's con, there's nothing that's... People who make things simple, black and white, are not seeing the world the way it should be seen. It's not realistic. It's not, that's not the way the world is. And on any topic, you can be sure that you pick the topic, I can bring you sources that will make the topic the worst thing in the world in the eyes of Chazal, right? And I can bring you sources that make it the best thing in the world in the eyes of Chazal. And it's not because they're different... positions amongst Chazal, some were positive and some were negative. No, usually it's not the case. Usually it depends on a lot of factors, and under these circumstances it's very positive, under these circumstances very negative. And they're all true. Just you have to qualify things. You have to be able to see things in much more detail than just yes or no. Is it positive or negative? Under these circumstances positive, under these circumstances negative. That goes for everything. Peace, is it? You can bring proof that peace is a positive thing. You can bring proof that peace is a very negative thing. They're makoros on both sides, and lamaisa, they're both true. Depends peace under what circumstances, with what factors, or whatever. And therefore, Chazal say that somebody who takes giant steps in the world, psiagasa, it impairs your eyesight. Takes away 1/500th of your eyesight, and the cure is yayin of, some have the gears of kiddush and havdalah. And that's one of the reasons why we put the wine of havdalah in our eyes. I was thinking that we should put the wine of kiddush in our eyes, I told, but the only thing is on Shabbos you're not allowed to do refuah. So mainly you don't put the wine of kiddush in your eyes, but havdalah is very motzei Shabbos, so we put the wine in our eyes as a symbol of this refuah. It restores your eyesight. Now, probably could be understood, literally. I'm not familiar with, you know, what taking giant steps has to do with your eyesight, but very possible that it's connected and it's literal and the wine has some kind of refuah, skula, whatever. But I think there's a deeper meaning, a more allegorical meaning. And that is somebody who plods through this world without taking the time to look around and deliberate what's going on around him. He just makes generalizations and sees everything just in simplistic ways and just plods through the world, so that affects his eyesight. And you really can't view things properly under those circumstances. If you're not going to take the time to think and to make divisions and chilukim, what's a good word for that? To make distinctions, that's the word. To make distinctions in this world, and everything is either black or white and simple, then inevitably the way that you see things is going to be distorted. You're not going to see the world the way it's supposed to be seen. It can't be seen like that. So what's the refuah? At least twice a week, you have to stop and deliberate. Because you have to know, is it Friday or is it Shabbos? You have to know, is it Shabbos or is it Motzei Shabbos? You're forced to take the time to make distinctions. If the whole week you don't do it, but if you're from Jew, twice a week you have to do it. That's the refuah. Right? Maybe that will give you the understanding that the rest of the week also you have to make distinctions. You can't just take things and put everything into one big mishmash. You have to be able to distinguish things and see where they are, what they are, what's kodesh, what's chol. That's the job of a yid. Lahavdil ben hakodesh uvein hachol. And it's not only kodesh and chol, but to be mavdil with detail. Look at the world in a detailed way, not to look at things in a very general way. And there's a Sfarno. What's it called? Before we get to the Sfarno, in the Haggadah, the whole inyan of Dayenu is it's not enough just to say, well, God, Yetzias Mitzrayim was great, thanks. Why was it great? What was every detail? Ilu Hotzion Mitzrayim, the loss of Em Shvatim, and every single detail is part of the praise. You can't just do it in a general way. You have to be able to dissect it and see every prat. That's the purpose of the Dayenu in the Haggadah. That the Shevach to the Rabban Hashem should not be just in general. There's a, what's it called, a Gemara in Tainis that says that if there was a drought and then there's rain, you have to give Shevach al kol tipah for every drop of rain. Just because there's a downpour doesn't mean you should forget about the fact that if there's one drop, you also have to thank the Rabban Hashem. So it's important to see the details, not just to see the general, again, not to see the trees, not just to see the forest. That's important. And there's a Sfarno, very interesting Sfarno, that I think bears this out also more, even more directly of what we're talking about. He says that the Rabban Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach lecho anoshim. Send for you, you send them. Don't let the Klal Yisrael pick them. You pick them. Why? Because you'll pick great people. And there'll be less problem than if they pick them, they may pick small people, not great people. And the Sfarno goes on to explain what that means, because on the surface, Moshe picked these great people who were great Rishoyim and really messed up Klal Yisrael. So what was going to be worse if the Jewish people picked lesser people? So Sfarno explains what the difference would be. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu would pick great people who would recognize the godless of Eretz Yisrael. They'd recognize how good Eretz Yisrael is. And if they came back, they would at least mention that. They would have their, if they were a Shoyim, they mentioned negative things. But they also mentioned the positive. And even though the Gemara says it's part of the reason they mentioned the positive is because they wanted people to believe the negative too. And if you don't say something that's true, people don't believe total lies. But they also did it because, the Sfarno says, because they were great people and they recognized the good. One second, we'll see what that means. But had they not been great people, had they been small people, they would have come back only with negative. And they would have denied that the land is a good land. And what would have been the difference? The Rabban Hashem said it's a good land. If they came back and they said, we saw that God lied to us, it's not a good land, Moshe Rabbeinu would have had an impossible time to prove them wrong. Nobody saw the land. Moshe didn't see it. How do you know? Because you trust the Rabban Hashem, fine. But these people were there. They're eyewitnesses. They said that God lied. And it would have been possible to make them do tshuva. But the people came back and they said, yes, God told the truth. It is a good land. But we can't conquer it. Now Moshe Rabbeinu could argue with them. You say like that, I say like this. Right? It was easy to get the people to do tshuva. Because they didn't contradict what God said. They just said that we don't think we can conquer it. The problem was us. We are too cowardly or we're too weak or whatever. Then Moshe Rabbeinu had a Pesach to argue with them. That's something he can argue on. That's not something that he's contradicting, but they saw with their own eyes. Right, and he didn't see, and they didn't see, so they have to go by these witnesses who came. So the witnesses, they reported back the truth. Why is that called a great person or a small person? Because the way we're saying, a great person sees details. He doesn't let the black override the white, so he only sees black. Or the white override the black, so he only sees white. He sees black, he sees white. Now, sometimes he can come to the wrong conclusion from that. Right? But that's already something that's subjective that you can argue about. But somebody who sees things either black or white, because if they see it negative, then everything's negative. They can't see any positive. That's a small-minded person. Small-minded people can't hold details in their head. They can't say, well, I don't like that person for this and this reason, but there is positive about that person. If you don't like them for this and this reason, then there's nothing positive. They never do anything right. They're totally no good. Right? That's a small-minded person. A greater person is able to see things in perspective, to see the good, to see the bad. He may be a great Rasha too, and not know how to interpret the good and the bad. But at least he sees. He doesn't let the good wipe out the bad, or the bad wipe out the good. He sees things in perspective. That's a great person. And a small-minded person doesn't see things in perspective. Sees either all good, all white, all good, all bad. He can't make distinctions. It's too complicated. It's too confusing. And the truth is that's why sometimes Gedolim put out pronouncements that are all black or all white without any, because they're dealing with people who are small-minded, and they can't deal with these kinds of what's it called, distinctions. They can't make distinctions, so you have to deal with people the way they are.
So what happens with the people
who do make distinctions? That's a very, they have to do with what the majority of people, or where's going to be the most damage. That's one of the reasons that, you know, I'll give you an example. A statement, a quote card comes out, all computers are osir, right? No one is allowed to use. I know that when they wanted to put out a statement like that, Rav Eliyashiv, the person told me when he's very close to Rav Eliyashiv, told me we wouldn't sign such a thing. Because it's ridiculous. Right, it's impossible that no one should ever use computers, because there are people whose parnassa depends on it. There's definitely positive things that you use a computer for. So what's going to happen if you make such a blanket isser? Then the people who can't listen to it will be impossible to listen to it. So at the end, nobody's going to listen to it, because it's impossible to do like that. Right, they have to be discerning. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have to make a blanket thing, because people aren't discerning, and if you start making distinctions, people aren't going to be able to handle them. So it's not an easy situation. Right? Sometimes there have to be distinctions, but the Gedolim feel that there's more to lose if you start making distinctions which people can't follow, and Echanami, the people who can make the distinctions are going to suffer because of that, and be put in a situation that is going to be very, very difficult. So then you have to know how to deal with that too. Then you ask a shaila and you go back to the gadol or get somebody to find out. Maybe there are, you know, yotzim in a cloud, right? But the people who don't know how to ask those kind of questions or don't need to ask those questions, they'll just accept it the way that it is and they'll deal with it like that. And it's good for them. And the people who need the distinctions and need the yotzim in a cloud will have to ask another shaila and be told, okay, you're in a situation where you're yotzim in a cloud. The what's it called? So that's one point. So if we're going to look at the Holocaust, we're going to have to look at it in a very detailed way and see of all the issues that arose because of it, right? What were the positive side of those issues and the negative side of those issues and the implications that are good, bad, whatever, and not just, you know, paint everything with a broad brush. So that's one yesod that we're going to make use of. Another one is, I always like to use this with what's it called, how much we go into this, I'll mention it in a very concise way. Rashi, what's it called, asks a question in the beginning in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Lohoya Torah Lahaskel El Neachodesh Azelachem, She Mitzvah Rishonish and Stavu by Israel. Torah should have started with the first mitzvah. Why did it start with Bereishis? So, the obvious question is, if the Torah would just be a book of mitzvahs, after HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, it's just a list of mitzvahs, one after the other, then Enochanami, Torah is a mitzvah book. It should start with the first mitzvah. Why does it start with stories? But the Torah is not just a mitzvah book. After that first mitzvah, there's plenty of Sipurim. Sipuri Yitzias Mitzrayim, and in the Midbar, there's a whole Bamidbar, which is mostly, not mitzvahs, mostly stories. So if the Torah is a mixture of stories and mitzvahs, why is it more logical to start with the first mitzvah? It's logical to me. Start with the first story. Start with Bereishis. Where else should it start? Right, what's the question? Torah should have started with the first mitzvah. Why not? Why should it start with the first story? What's the kasha? So the answer, which usually takes a long time to give, but the answer, bottom line, is the Torah is only a book of mitzvahs. Every single thing in the Torah is a mitzvah. There is no things there that are just for information's sake. There's no history in the Torah. There's no, what's it called, scientific knowledge in the Torah for the sake of history, the sake of scientific knowledge. The Torah is a book of mitzvahs. And some of the mitzvahs are clothed in stories. Mitzvah meaning horah. Torah teaches you. It guides you. It doesn't just enlighten you with information. It's not there to give you information. It's there to give you information that will lead you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. That's how the Rambam is koveya what Torah is. It's maybe the day Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. That's why the Rambam explains, when we learned about Mashiach, why the details of how Mashiach is going to come are not in the Torah. And not Torah Shebichsav, not Torah Shebal Peh. There's no Mesorah to the Nevi'im, not to the Chachomim. She'enom Nevi'im lo lidei Avas Hashem v'lo lidei Yiras Hashem. They don't serve the purpose the Torah is supposed to serve. Therefore, they're not in the Torah. Not in Torah Shevastav, not Torah Sheval Peh. They don't bring you closer to the Rebbe. They're interesting. Very interesting to know if Mashiach's donkey is going to be gray or black. But is it going to bring you, make you a better person? Bring you closer to the Rebbe? No. Only things that will bring you closer to the Rebbe are in the Torah. And therefore, if it's in the Torah, you have to find out how that's going to teach you something or bring you closer to the Rebbe. Even the things that appear to be history, even the things that appear to be scientific information, just damn trivial points, Chazal teach us that every single thing of that is a purpose. If you delve into it, you'll find out what it is. And if it doesn't serve that purpose, it's not there. And in the past, in drushes, and we've given many examples of things that are missing from the Torah, because they don't aid you in the lesson that thing is teaching, and things that are in the Torah that seem to be without any lesson, and there's plenty of lessons to them. And that's why it says, Ki lo dover reik hu mikem. The Torah is never something empty just for information's sake. And if it looks empty, then mikem. It's because you didn't learn it well enough. If you'll delve into it, you'll find what you're supposed to learn from that. And if you don't, if it doesn't have to seem to have a lesson, it's because you didn't learn it properly, not because there's no lesson there. So everything in the Torah is either a mitzvah that's open or a mitzvah that's clothed in some kind of information that seems to be only information, but it's really some kind of lesson. That's why the Ramban says that when the Torah uses the word Torah, specific, not general, not I gave you the Torah. Torah then means everything. But when it says HaTorah v'haMitzvos v'haChukim v'haMishpatim, Torah means a Sipurei HaTorah. Means the stories. But Torah means to teach. That means that all the stories teach you something. They're not there just to tell you nice stories, nice history. They're there to teach you something. And that's what the Zohar says. The Zohar says that the stories of the Torah are mitzvahs clothed in stories. That's what they are. So therefore, Rashi's question is like this. The Torah is all mitzvahs, from the beginning to the end. Therefore, where's the most logical place to start? Something that's an obvious mitzvah. Because that sets the pattern for everything else. When you write a book, so the first few paragraphs, the reader should be able to understand, right, or know what this book is all about. What kind of book is it? Right? In the first few paragraphs, you set the pattern, right, you set the foundation for what that book is. That the guy knows what he's reading. Is this fiction? Is it not fiction? Is it history? What is it? So, Lahavdil, What the Rav Avinashim should have done, Rashi says, is started with the first mitzvah. That sets the pattern. Now I know it's a mitzvah book. Now when I hit a story, I know I have to understand the story in light of it being a mitzvah that's clothed in a story. Because this book is a mitzvah book. But if you start with a story, then you run the risk of people thinking that there's stories in the Torah. And there's not mitzvahs. It's like we said in the beginning, it's a conglomeration of mitzvahs and stories. And that's not true. So the Torah should have started with the first obvious mitzvah that was given to Klal Yisrael. That would set the pattern. And then if there's stories afterwards, we'll understand them in light of mitzvahs. So why did Taka did it start with Bereishis? And that's not for now. But at some point we may go into the answer too. But if you look at Rashi carefully, the Torah didn't start with Bereishis. The Torah started with Achodesh HaZelachem. Right? Because Rashi says, Lohoya Torah lahaschil ela me'achodesh HaZelachem. Umatam posach b'breishis. Didn't say umatam hiskil b'breishis. Didn't start with breishis. There's a preface to the Torah. Right? Just like you have a book. It starts page one, but there may be 50 pages before page one of Roman numerals. That's the preface. That's the introduction. So the page one of the Torah is Achodesh HaZelochem. The preface to the Torah is breishis. So really the Torah started with Achodesh HaZelochem. That's the beginning of the Torah. The preface to the Torah is Bereishis, and there was a need why you couldn't start the first mitzvah without this preface. That's a separate discussion why that's the case. It's not for now. But it comes out that really the beginning of the Torah, and with that I have a cute vort, which I think I said in the past, and not necessarily everybody who's here heard it, but so we'll say it again. I doubt if people remember, it's not one of the more... The Gemara says that... later on, when the world reaches its completion, so the nations of the world are going to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, okay, we messed up the first time, right? But try us again. Tenu lanu meirosh v'nasenu. Give us the Torah from the beginning, and we'll do it. Okay? So it says the Ribbono Shel Olam will give them one mitzvah, and test them with that, the mitzvah of sukkah, and whatever. The Lashon is very difficult. Tnu lanu osa meirosh, give it to us from meirosh, from the beginning, v'nasen. What does that mean? But put the world back, l'mafreya, to the beginning, and try us again. And then what they meant to say is, give it to us now. That's what happened. The Rosh didn't make the world go back and rewind. Right? He tried them now at a mitzvah, sukkah. So what they meant is, give us another chance. Give it to us now, and we'll see what we can do. So what's the lashon? Tnu lanu osam meirosh v'nasen. So I wanted to say like this, based on what I just told you, that really the Torah started from Achodesh HaZelachem. For the sake of the Jewish people, there was a preface. Rashi says what the preface is. Now it's not time to go into detail. We had to know that we have a claim to Eretz Yisrael. Before we could even start the first mitzvah in the Torah, we have to know we're not Ganovim. We didn't steal Eretz Yisrael. Because if we're Ganovim, and the Torah okays that, then what's the purpose of all these mitzvahs? That's how the Taz seems to learn, right? If you think you're a ganav, then how can you start a Torah with mitzvahs that you're supposed to be moral, and you're starting out as a ganav? So the Torah, before it could give you any mitzvahs, had to tell you that you didn't steal Eretz Yisrael. Okay? That God created the world, he gave it to them, took it away from them, gave it to us. That's the preface of Bereishis. Comes out that if the Torah would have been given to Goyim, they still wouldn't be Jews. They wouldn't have gotten Eretz Yisrael. But they would have accepted Tariq mitzvahs. So they would have had mitzvahs that applied to them. There'd still be mitzvahs they didn't have. They're only meant for Jews. Right? We only went out of Mitzrayim. They wouldn't have had mitzvahs of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They weren't in Mitzrayim. Those wouldn't apply to them. Okay? They also wouldn't have gotten Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael would have given to Jews. Right? But there are more mitzvahs the Torah would have given to Goyim for those mitzvahs that Goyim could have had, more than Sheva mitzvahs been in Oath. So, therefore, the Torah wouldn't have started Bereishis if it was given to Goyim. Right? It was started from the beginning. From Achodesh HaZelachem. Not from Bereishis Bar Elokim, because it only started with us with a preface. They didn't need an introduction and a preface because they didn't have Eretz Yisrael. So the whole Bereishis, till Achodesh HaZelachem, doesn't apply for Goyim as the Torah. So how about Achodesh HaZelachem? That also wouldn't apply to Goyim. There still would be Yidden, and the Torah said Lochem. Rosh Chodesh is given to Jews. We determine Rosh Chodesh, not Goyim. Even if the Goyim were given the Torah, they still would have been Jews. There still would have been Jews in the world. So that part of the pasuk Hakodesh Hazelochem would not have applied to the Goyim either. So the Torah wouldn't have started with that for them. So where would the Torah have started for the Goyim? From Rosh Chodesh, from those words. That's what it means. Tenu lanu osam me'rosh v'nasena. Give us the Torah from the word rosh, and we'll do it. Because anything before that is not nogeitas. So the haschalas haTorah should have been from rosh chadashim. This is the beginning. So the whole world will have a remembrance of Yetzias Mitzrayim because it's supposed to make an impression on the world. So this will be the first month for the whole world. But HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, that you have the ability to make Rosh Chodesh, that's only for Jews. They wouldn't have had the ability to declare Rosh Chodesh. That's Sanhedrin has to do that, not Goyim. And Goyim can't be on a Sanhedrin. But Rosh Chodashim, that could apply to them. So the Torah would have started from the word Rosh. That's what they said. Tenu lanu osam me'rosh v'nasen. But basically, every single thing in the Torah, therefore, is mitzvahs. Okay, we will pick up from this point next week. This is just if that's the truth, then what I'm going to tell you next week, I'll just finish off the idea. The whole Torah is what's it called, is basically the same thing as the Bria. God looked in the Torah and he created the world. That means the world and the Torah are the same thing, except one is in the more theoretical, abstract, and the other is Lamaisa. God created the world from the Torah. So there's nothing in the world that's not in the Torah, and there's nothing in the Torah that's not in the world. That means if everything in the Torah is mitzvahs, then every single thing in the world is also a mitzvah. It somehow teaches you something, just like every word and every letter in the Torah teaches you something. So all of nature is there to teach you, and all of history is there to teach you. So you have to look at it as something that has implications to learn from, and not just that it happened and that's it. So history and everything that happens and everything you see in the Bria, we'll see next week, is something that's there to teach you something. And that's how you have to look at history and look at nature or whatever. Not look at it as just an interesting, trivial fact that's in some science book or whatever, but it's something that teaches you something about the Rabbanu Shel Olam that's supposed to bring you closer to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, just like every word in the Torah has the same purpose. So the Bria and the Torah. And next week we'll discuss, then what's the difference between learning the Bria or learning the Torah if they're both the same? Why can't you be a scientist instead of a Talmud Chacham? Right? Or can you? So that we'll discuss in Mitzvah Hashem next week.